Well, it's really good to be able to share with you on this subject. It's something very close to my heart. And it's been one of these things that has bugged me since I became a Christian. And it's been quite a long time now. And I asked so many questions in those early days that seemed to me no one had answers for. And so in the end, I sort of let it slide and went along with things as they were. But always inside of me, there was this question mark as to why it was I was second class. And I think it may be difficult for fellows to grasp the strength of that feeling that there is in many, many women. There is a sort of, we're born with it. We're born with this feeling of being second class. And we don't understand why. And we come to God with this question in our faces, in our hearts and in our minds. And we come to God and we think, are you really my father as well as the men's father? And if you are, why have you designed it that I'm second class, that I'm not first class? What is it in me, Lord, that is wrong? And why did you create that wrongness in me? Maybe there are lots of women here who wouldn't put it into words in exactly the same way that I do. But I think there'll be an echo in many hearts. And right at the very beginning, just so the men understand how we do feel, so they know it's not just me stood up here spouting, would women who feel an echo of something like that in their hearts just put their hands up? Go on, be honest, you know, if you get that echo in your heart. You see, it's the large majority, fellas. That was for your benefit, men. Do it again. The men on the front row didn't turn around. Do it again. You see, it's a large percentage that have this feeling, and we're born with it. And we don't understand why we're born with it. And if you're a sort of more gentle woman than I am, you sort of can live with it all your life, like wearing something that rubs you. But somebody like me, I keep wanting to take the jolly thing off. I don't want to be rubbed. I don't understand why I should be rubbed. And what is there wrong with me, God? And I keep trying to take it off. And I've been, you know, sort of outgoing, and I've done my thing, and I've done what I could where I could, and I've exercised my gifts. But all the time inside of me, there's been this sort of ache for the whole of my sex. And it's driven me back, really, to God, where it should have been driven, if you see what I mean. And it's caused me to ask him to show me something. And I used to have a terrible problem reading my Bible. In fact, for a long time I didn't do it, because the only examples that I had were of men reading the Bible. And generally speaking, men read the Bible and then they think what they think about it. And you see, I try to do the same, and I don't function like that. When I read my Bible, I read it, and then I have to sit back and think what I feel about it, which is very different. But because I was in a male-dominated atmosphere called the church, which is a male-dominated atmosphere, I felt that the right way to do it was this way. And so for years, I tried to read my Bible like that, and then in the end, I gave up, because I would sit there and my mind was a blank, because I wasn't going to get the answer up there. Now, when I share, I want you to know right from the beginning that what I am sharing with you is what I feel Satan has done to all of us. I'm talking about Satan and his work. I'm not talking about you as individual guys or you as individual girls. I'm talking about what Satan's done. So bear with me when I hit something that might feel a bit like a raw nerve for you. I'm not hitting you. But if you respond in that way, then think, maybe this woman is right. Maybe the enemy has been at work here, and I've never realized it. Because I'm not having a go at anybody, except that rat bag of an enemy of mine. That's who I'm having a go at tonight. So I don't want to lose any of you. I'm not having a go at males because I feel you're chauvinistic and you should change. I'm having a go at the enemy who's put things in you that tempt you to being chauvinistic. And I want those things to change. So I'm not having a go at you personally. And in the end, I went back to my Bible and I started reading it how I can. which is to read bits of it and then think what I feel and let my imagination run on. And finally, I got myself back into Genesis. And Genesis has always been a bit of a pain to me because it's the story of how it all happened. And of course, we all know that from Genesis, we learn certain things, that woman was deceived, that woman was made second. Therefore, because she was deceived, she's not to be trusted. And because she was made second, she's not in the image of God. We all know that because we've all been taught that. And we all agree with that. And that's where my hurt started. That's where it started. So I went back and I started to read my Bible again. And I tried to do it with my newfound freedom of allowing my imagination to work. And the first thing that really struck me was in Genesis 2, it says, and I'll read it to you, needn't look it all up. It says, let us make man in our image. And I immediately thought, well, that's a guy. Right, that's a guy. In our likeness, so God's like that. And let them rule over them. I thought, them, hang about, them. There's only one here, Lord. And I thought, where's the them? No, I don't understand this. No, I've lost you already, Lord. And then I continue to read it. And it goes on and it says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. And suddenly things started to fall into place for me. And I suddenly saw that what God had made was something that I couldn't even begin to imagine. I couldn't begin to imagine what it was like. Because it was, you see, I don't believe that God has got a sort of sex. But I believe that God has everything that's in us. So therefore, when he created man, we're not talking about male now. We're talking about man. And he was sort of composite human being. He had absolutely everything. And now I begin to feel more comfortable. Because I think, oh, well, so he's got all the male and all the female attributes. Because God has. God is talked about not only as being a father, but he's talked about as being a mother. He's talked about as having breasts. He's talked about as taking his children on his knee and suckling them, which only a woman can do. God is talked about in those ways. So the thing began to come into focus for me. And I thought, well, what happened then, Lord? And I got quite excited. So then I saw that there was this man, not male, this man in this garden called Adam. And God said to him, rule and reign. And I got excited. And I saw this picture of Adam striding around, you know, in the garden, ruling and reigning. And then it goes on to say that Adam named all the animals. So that's something that Adam did. And I had this picture forming in my mind of what Adam was like. You know, Adam knew when to put the onion sets in the ground. Adam knew when to plant the runner beans and the tomatoes. Adam knew when the lupins should go in and when the dahlias should come out. And when all that was done, Adam knew how to cook the rhubarb and freeze it. Adam knew how to pick the flowers and arrange them. Adam knew how to put the colours together so that they looked good. Adam knew everything. And Adam was bored talking to himself. Because there's Adam in the garden and all the animals, and they're not like him, the Bible says. And so when there's a lovely sunset, Adam says to himself, it's a lovely sunset. And Adam says to himself, yes, it is, isn't it? And Adam says to himself, the rhubarb was good last night, wasn't it? And Adam says, oh, yes, it was excellent. I like the way you cooked it. And all this is going on because Adam is everything. And God looked at Adam and he said, it's not good that what I've done here, because I've created one on his own. And then God did an amazing thing. He didn't go away and make Eve because he couldn't. There was nothing left. Nothing left. He didn't scratch around and get some dog ends and some bits of this and bits of that and bits of the other and make a second creation. He didn't do it because there was nothing. So what he had to do was he had to divide Adam up. He had to actually separate him out. And it's significant. Things like The first person that Eve would have seen is not Adam, but her God. That's the first person Eve would have seen. The same with Adam. This isn't a second-class citizen. As Eve opened her eyes for the first time, it would have been God's face that she looked in. The same as Adam. And here are these two now who are one. And, you know, my imagination runs riot that God comes into the garden and he calls Adam. Now, who answers? I think they both came running because Eve didn't have a name then. She was still Adam. She was still one. They were still complete. They were still united. They were still together. There was a oneness there in the garden. And it wasn't until they ate of the tree and something went wrong that changed. Eve does not actually get a name until after they're thrown out of the garden. So do you imagine God comes in to talk with this creation, which is him, which is made in his image, and he calls Adam and both come running because there is no other name. There is no other creation. There are no other people. They're one. So they come running. And it's just how God designed it, that they should rule and reign, because there's no difference between them yet. They're called to rule and reign because they're one. I think John mentioned this the other day, and this was something that really got me, you know, my old brain ticking over. Because John explained to you that the theologians say that if you really want to see how it happened, you go back to the first mention. Well, here it is. What is our purpose? To rule and reign. That's our purpose. It's the first mention. That's what we were designed to do, to rule and reign. Not just the men, not just the women, but together. So it changes things. It changes the perspective. That is where God is taking us, together. And what happened was that Satan had a plan. And you read what he does in Genesis. And he questions the woman. He comes into the garden in Genesis 3. And he says to her, did God really say? Now you say that to a woman today and she's immediately at sixes and sevens. Did God really say? Or perhaps he didn't. Perhaps I didn't get it right. You can see what's happening already. You can see that in the separating it up, that already there's, you know, there's rocky ground there. Because she wasn't together with Adam. Adam would have said, of course God said it. But she wasn't together with Adam at that point. And the question is, did God say? And she's not sure. She's not sure what God has said now. And finally she takes and she eats and she gives it to Adam and he eats. Now you have to understand that Adam doesn't seem to have needed any kind of persuasion. The Bible just says he ate it. And it isn't until Adam also has eaten it that the eyes of them both are opened. They did it as separate individuals, but the result was a combined thing. It isn't that Eve ate, her eyes were opened and she knew what had happened. It wasn't until Adam also had eaten that together their eyes were opened and they saw what they had done. So it's a separate thing, but they're still one. Can you see that? They're still one. They're still how God planned for them to be. But they sinned. And Satan's plan went into operation. Now I believe that Satan's plan was basically to, well, do God one in the eye. You know, broadly speaking, was to give God a slap in the eye. But Satan's plan is still the same today as it was in the garden. A, he wants us to question our ability to hear God. And that's what happened in the garden. He wants to question God's desire for us, because in 3, the serpent says, you won't die, for God knows that if you eat it, you'll be like God. He's questioning God's desire for us. Because, of course, that was God's desire, that we should live forever and that we should know all things. And he's still doing that today. 3, that God wants to destroy, that the enemy wants to destroy our communication. our communication with God, our communication with one another, and finally, our communication nationally. You see that between the Americans and the Russians. That's bad communication. It's part of the enemy's plan. And he wanted to put into operation, there in the garden, a battle between the sexes. And he started way back there. And here we are, all these thousands of years further down the line, and the battle's still raging. It's still raging. Out there in the world, the women have become militant. They've become a sex that says we do not need men. They are totally expendable. Give us a sperm bank and we will inseminate ourselves and we will have children. We'll have boy children merely to give us the sperm bank. But we don't need men. We're complete without them. All we need is the sperm. That's all we need. We don't need them for love. We don't need them for sustenance. We don't need them for help. We don't need them for companionship. We don't need them for sex. All we need them for is the sperm, and we can deep freeze it. That's where they've gone. That's what they're after in the world. And they're militant. They're militant. Satan is getting everything that he wants out there. But here inside the church, the women aren't militant, but they're passive and they're hurt. And they're wandering around, still feeling second class. And as the women in the church, I believe, begin to look out into the world and see the militancy, the enemy will try to bring that into the church. And we, as Christian women, must resist it. We must resist it at all costs. Even if we don't come into release in our generation, I believe far better that than to bring militancy into the church through the women. Far better that. But I believe the time has come for us to be set free. But we need to stand united against the militancy that's in the world. And we need to be vocal about it. And we need to say that we don't agree with it. And we need to say we are not feminists. We are feminine, yes. Feminists, no. And we need to be very clear, because it's part of Satan's plan. And it's still in operation. So what happened next? God came into the garden, didn't he? And God called them. And they didn't come because they knew that they were naked. But when they did come, God said, what's happened? And here we see the polarization of the sexes. Here we see the first man, for the first time, pass the first buck. And fellas, you've inherited that. You've inherited it from that half of creation called Adam. You've inherited. It's a historic bondage, this desire in you to pass the buck. Because there is that desire in you. You were born with that, the same as I was born with mine. You didn't choose to feel like that. And what did the man say? The woman you gave me, he passed the buck two ways. Her and you, God. Not my fault. And it's the first time in history that the buck is passed. And there it begins. The man standing there like that. And poor old woman who gets told that she was deceived and therefore she's untrustworthy, her answer is very clear. The serpent deceived me. I tell you, if you're in deception, you don't know it. You don't. That's how you are deceived. I mean, if you're in deception and you know you're deceived, then you're not deceived. So the woman stood there and she said, the serpent beguiled me. The serpent deceived me. And I ate. Now, I believe that whereas the Bible, not the Bible, but men from there on distrusted women and brought us more and more and more into bondage, God hears that. Because in all the cursing that God then does, he gives one promise and he gives it solely to the woman. Because God does some heavy cursing then. He curses the man, he curses the woman, he curses the ground, he curses the serpent. But in all of that, he gives a promise to the woman. And he says, from her seed will come the ultimate downfall of the serpent. And she'll do it without the help of a male. Sorry, men. Because he was talking about Jesus. So I believe that God really did curse us, girls. I believe he cursed us. I believe he cursed us in the area of the reproductive system, because he talks about it being hard work to bring children into the world, to bear them, and our desires would be to our husbands. I believe he cursed us. And I don't want to get round that. I'm not trying to get round it, if you understand me. He cursed us. He cursed men as well. And he cursed the earth for men's sake, and said that it would be hard work for men to work. And I believe that was because of the back passing. And God said, and now you're going to work like you've never worked, mate. By the sweat of your brow, you'll get anything. And that has been a cause of hurt and complaint to men right through the centuries. And as often as they can, they will offload the work on the women, if they can. That's the pattern. Now, I'm not talking about you. You are getting older, this, aren't you? This is the enemy. Start getting angry. Start getting fired up at what he's done to us. Start getting stirred up. Start gritting your teeth and thinking to yourself, ratbag, I never knew it before, perhaps for some of you, but I'm beginning to know it now. Start getting angry. This is historic. We take it in with our mother's milk. It's historic. We're born with it. The woman. I'm majoring on the woman tonight and throwing a few bits to the men, all right? The woman. Now, God cursed, I call it the womb area, right? Now, let's look at modern woman. If you need any proof for what I'm saying, a woman today is allowed to have premenstrual tension, postmenstrual tension, and ovulation tension. That doesn't leave you much of your month. She's allowed to have those. If a woman suffers from those kinds of tension, she can go to the doctor. The doctor knows exactly what she's talking about, and he will prescribe for them. He will prescribe drugs for them. Now, I'm not talking about hormones. There is a rise and a fall in a woman's body of hormones, which triggers off mechanisms in a woman's body which makes her menstruate. And without those, she doesn't do it. So she needs those. But it's not those, actually, that cause us the problem. It's what Satan brings on top of them. It's what he brings on top of them. He brings, well, one set of symptoms are called the miseries. And all that happens to a woman, all, is that for about 7 to 10 days before her period, she aches and she has these occasional sort of cramps in her stomach, and her back aches, and her head aches here or here, and her throat aches, and it's called the aching miseries. That's what the doctor calls it. He's got a big long name as well, but basically speaking, it's called the aching miseries. And there are very few women who don't suffer in some way or another. So that here is Satan bringing something in on top. In the worst cases, women suffer from very, very bad depression before and after a period, and in the middle of the month when she ovulates. That's the other end of the scale, is deep depression, often suicidal depression. A woman often, as she's coming towards her period, has a personality change. She becomes a shrew. She becomes unbearable to live with. She can't live with herself, let alone anybody else living with her. It's a misery to her. And women all over the world, when these begin, they look at the calendar. They look at the calendar and say, aha. Now, when I began to realize that I was aha-ing, I thought to myself, yeah, aha, indeed, aha. My body's my body. God has made it to function in a certain way, but I don't feel what's happening to me is godly. And I want you to know that my testimony is I kicked it. I kicked it out through the door. So that for years and years and years of my life, I didn't even know my period was coming until it arrived. Now, many of you use your periods as excuses. Excuses to get away with things. Excuses to be unpleasant. It's all part of Satan's plan. Excuses not to be responsible. You see, if you're not in your right mind, you can't be responsible for your actions. I want to be responsible for my actions every day of the year. I want to be a woman of God who is not governed by what Satan does with my hormones. And if I can get to grips with that and see the enemy run over that, then I believe that God can use me every day of my life. But on the off days, he can't use us, can he, girls? It's too terrible on some of those off days. All you want to do is to get back into your bed and curl up in a ball. See, what happened was that God cursed the area and Satan said, aha. And do you know why? But use your imagination. Here we are in the garden. And God's doing all this heavy cursing. And then Satan is there and he hears this promise. And he looks at this woman and he says, blow my legs off, as my teenagers say. This woman's going to have a child that is going to kill me. I have got to get to work on every woman that's able to bear a child. Because he never knew when the child was coming. God didn't tell him. Didn't tell the woman or the man either. So every woman potentially is going to be the instrument to actually annihilating him. Can you imagine how he hates us? How he seeks to destroy us? Because he knows, because God has said, that ultimately his downfall is coming through our sex. So Satan went for us. Satan wanted to bring us down as low as he possibly could. And men have cooperated with him, unknowingly, but they have cooperated with him. See, women have an extremely low opinion of themselves. And as I talk to women and go around the countryside, I would say it's at epidemic proportions. Epidemic proportions amongst women. But is there any surprise to you that a woman would have a low opinion of herself when she descended from the garden into virtual slavery? When she became a total chattel? Here is a woman who is not made in God's image. Even the Judean tradition doesn't uphold a woman as being equal in the sight of God with males. The tradition doesn't. You see women breaking through the tradition and breaking the mold and being the exception. But the tradition of the Jews was that women were definitely subservient, that women were there to bear children, that women were there to bring money and possessions. But they weren't there to rule and reign. So that women are prone to certain things. They're prone to low self-opinion. You ask a woman, you look at a woman and you think, oh, that's a beautiful woman. And you say to her, oh, you're a good-looking girl. And she says, yes, but my legs are too long. and I've got this mark in the middle of my back. And actually, you know, I've got one shoulder that's about half an inch higher than the other. And ask any woman, give a woman a compliment. And she won't know what to do with it half of the time. Tell her she's beautiful and she'll tell you you're a liar. Tell her that you like that dress on her and she'll say, are you sure it's my colour? Women have such a low self-opinion. It's awful. It's awful. I know it sounds funny, but when you live with it, it's awful. Tell a woman that she's prayed a good prayer, and she'll say, did I? You know, say to a woman, I'd like to have a word with you, and her heart will begin to beat like mad. Even if it's just to say to her, do you think you could come round tomorrow and help me with the, you know, help my wife with the children or something. Her heart will begin to go boom, 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 boom. Because inside of her, this low self-opinion is forcing her into, what have I done? What have I done wrong? Why am I reacting like this? Women also are paranoid about criticism. Paranoid. Absolutely paranoid. There is a fear of criticism amongst women which almost sinks them without trace. But would you be surprised when you see Satan's plan for them and the way that they've been brought low? Would you be surprised? I don't know if you know, but the Jewish tradition, and I'm not talking about the Old Testament. The Old Testament and the laws there were designed to bring a woman out of the curse of God. But they were a set of laws that nobody could keep. I mean, the men couldn't keep them. The women couldn't keep them. See, when a woman was having her period, she was unclean. When she was having a baby, she was unclean. She was unclean for a lot of her life because there wasn't any contraception in those days. So a woman was either having a period or pregnant. And so for a lot of her life, she was unclean. But God was providing a way back through the curse that he'd put on her. But it was too heavy to bear. And God knew that. That's why Jesus was coming. Because Jesus bore our curses, finally, once and for all on the tree. But there is a way back through the law, if only you can keep it. And that's the same for men and women. But the tradition of the Jews was that women were a snare. You see, women weren't to be trusted. Women were a snare. Women would get men into trouble. Women tempted men to lust after them. And so the best place for a woman was in her home. The best place for a woman was either under the wing of her father or under the wing of a husband, and kept out of sight, out of mind, because of the snare that she was. I mean, Jesus blew it away. He blew it away. Because he turned to the men and he said, I tell you, to lust after a woman is to commit adultery. That was to the men. He blew it away. He said, it's not their fault. The sin's in you. You do the lusting, not them. He blew it away. But here we are with the weight of this history on our backs. With the weight of this history. With the way that we've been treated for centuries. In this country where we are now, it wasn't until about 1850, now I'm not getting the dates wrong, 1850, that a married woman was given the first rights over her own property. That's not long ago, is it? And how about wife beating? Now, if you've got two total strangers, a male and a female, out in the street, or in a bar, or in a hotel, or in a pub, or in an anywhere, and one beat the other one black and blue, pulled lumps of hair from one's head, and poured boiling water over them, the one who'd done that would be thrown into jail. Not if you're married. That is a domestic argument. Even something in our law today that says a woman somehow has a lesser right than a male. There's something there. There's something of the enemy there that seeks to keep us in the place that the enemy wants us. It's a terrible thing when you really sort of try and take your blinkers off and look at it. If you look at the church, it's been for so long a male club. You know, during the hundreds of years when the Church of Rome was the seeable big thing that was happening, the male who was at the top of the pile was the celibate male. Never touched a woman. Next came the men who were married, second-class citizens. Next came the women who were also celibate, the nuns. Then came the married women. We've always been the dog ends, the tail, the end. And we have that whole history piling up behind us. We have that whole history piling there, bending us over, making us react in ways that we don't want to react. I react in ways that I am ashamed of at times. I say to myself, you are a woman of God. Get your act together. Don't be motivated by the enemy. Get your act together. And he didn't go away and ritually cleanse himself. He blew it all away. All the time he blew it all away. All the time he blew it all away. He went through life doing it, blowing it away. He talked with women. He spent time with women. How about the woman at the well? He goes up and she's drawing water. And he says to her, will you give me a drink? Now that was a shock for a start. Because you see, you're a snare. Men do not talk to you. Men don't dare to talk to you in case they lust after you. And this bloke wants her to give him a cup of water. So then she gives him water, and he begins to speak to her. And then she goes back into the town, and the Bible tells us that she was so fired up with what he'd said and done and how he set her free, that she started preaching the gospel. And the whole town turned out to see him. He blew it away. He absolutely blew it away. You see, he came to die for my curses. He came to nail them with himself to the tree. And when God cursed me in the garden, and he put that heavy load on me, Jesus came to take it away. So that under that regime, the thing that I am designed to do is to rule and to reign. That's what God designed me to do. Not on my own. Not on my own. But he did design me to be part of the reigning and ruling structure. I would like to just finally share with the men the things that I felt you got as your package. I can't go into them, but I would like to just mention them to you. You're born with a feeling of rightness. You're born with it. You feel right in everything you do. Even if you spit on the pavement, you feel right about doing it. You're born feeling that. And that, I believe, is part of what is wrong with you, if you understand what I'm saying, what Satan has done. Many of you are born with a mistrust of the intuitive. Anything intangible, you will say, explain it. If you cannot explain it, it's rubbish. We don't want to know. Be logical, otherwise you are not to be trusted. You're born with that sense of mistrusting something that you can't get hold of and feel, work out, sort out, and write down. And then hold it up and say, oh yes, A, B, C, D. You're born with that mistrust. You're born with a fear of being dominated. You don't want to be dominated by anybody. And it leads you into fearful independence. I believe that that is the key to why more women get saved into the church at the minute than men. Because it's a fear of being dominated, and it leads you into being independent. And if you want to start seeing men saved, I think you've really got to bash it on the nose. And that there is in you a fear of making decisions which are unpopular. You don't mind making popular decisions, but unpopular decisions you don't like making, in case nobody goes along with you, in case you're wrong, and in case you're out on a limb. You don't like doing that. And those are just sort of to whet your appetite. I would like to say something about married women in the church, because I think that's important. The one scripture that I don't want to do away with and can't do away with and can't get round and can't walk through and over and all the rest is that a married woman should be in submission to her husband. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But I believe that that is part of God's social order. I believe that that is so that the world sees the togetherness of Christ and his church. I believe it's for out there. I don't believe it applies when I come into the kingdom of God, into the church. I don't believe that applies. I believe in there, I have to be submissive to the leadership. Whatever that is, whatever sex that is, I believe that I have to submit there. And therefore, I want to recommend to my single sisters that you really take stock of your state, because you can perhaps begin to understand why it is to be better to be single than to be married. Because you can stand in your own right without having to submit to a husband in every part of your life. I believe that's what it's on about, that a single woman is freer to pursue what the Lord is laying on her heart than a married woman is. It's hypothetical, this, and I know that, and I'm saying that love before you tell me to, because John always tells me when I'm being hypothetical, you see. But I think that if I were a single woman, by now I would be living in the East End of London, because that's one of my burdens. But it isn't a shared burden. So I submit to my husband in that, and we don't live there. And I don't have a problem with that. And I think that's absolutely right. But as a single woman, I could go and live there. Because I'm not answerable in the same way in social structure. So I didn't want to leave the single women thinking that they were another class all on their own, you know, and left out of this married business. And in the church, I believe it's really important that we see that we need to put the male and female aspects back together. Not in marriage, not in sex, but in the spirit. So that there is, as the Bible says, there is no male and no female. I don't believe that should be in the church. But then you see, I don't believe that there should be any bond or free in the church. And in today's idiom, I suppose, I would say that that would be workers and employers. Because that's the bond and the free. That the bondsman, the worker, thinks that the employer is the free man and he wants to be it. So we shouldn't bring that into the church either. Do you understand what I mean? And the other thing that we shouldn't bring into the church is the Jew and the Greek. And that's racism. That shouldn't be in the church either. So those three things shouldn't be in the church. And I agree with that. But we've got to put it back together again. I would like you, men, to give us women the right to find out who we are, what we're good at, and how God has gifted us, and to do it and be it in the kingdom of God, in the church. That's what I would really like. And I would like your active encouragement for us, that to feel that you're there supporting us 100% of the way, and that somehow in your own hearts you've eradicated this question of, Dad, isn't this woman trying to be a man? I would like to see you eradicate that in your hearts and help us to be free. But I think I finished. When the fellas go upstairs, just to prepare you girls, I'm going to actually look at those areas of bondage. I'm going to ask you to stand if you know you're bound in any of those areas. One by one, we're going to go through them painfully, one by one, and we're going to pray, and we're going to set you free and give you back that ground. So that's where we're going when we separate. Thank you.